Hello and welcome once again to At The Table with Gail. I'm Peter Fleming and sitting opposite me is the delightful Gail Hall with a fistful of recipes as always. Hello, Gail.
Oh, hello, Peter. Well, I have got a fistful actually, and our theme for all our recipes this day is crispy.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, we've got lots of crispy stuff. So, and this one really appealed to me when I first saw it. But this is what gave me the idea of crispy, because I thought, oh, I'm sure I must be able to find, you know, other crispy recipes. So this is the one that really, you know, caught my eye. And it's called Cantonese Crispy Pork Belly. And we don't very often have pork on this program.
Well, you got all the right words there for me.
Oh.
Sounds good.
Oh, sounds good, listeners. Looks like it's going to be in the oven.
I love a pork belly, I think. It must be about one of the worst foods for you.
Is that expensive to buy? Is pork belly come in different sizes?
Or do they cut it? It can be expensive in restaurants. Yeah. And it's just, of course, just dripping fat.
Oh, okay. Well, I never look at it, to be quite honest.
Absolutely wonderful.
But this appealed to me. So we've got 1 kilo of pork belly. Now, I had to look up this, listeners, because I just didn't have any idea what they were talking about. So it's 1 tablespoon of Shaoxing wine.
Very good.
Yeah, and I thought to myself, well, where do you buy Shaoxing wine? So I looked it up, and you can actually use dry sherry as a substitute. And as I looked further, you can actually use a dry white, but don't want to complicate matters. So first of all, dry sherry
I'd go to the Shaoxing shop.
Oh, would you? Oh. Okay. Well, you probably could find it at the bottle store, no doubt. Mm. White vinegar, 1/4 cup of salt, 1 egg white. Now, the marinade for this is 2 teaspoons of salt. Take note, lots of salt. 1 teaspoon of sugar and 1/2 teaspoon of 5-spice powder. Now, the method for this is rub the wine/sherry all over the pork, then score the meat, taking care not to go too deep and into the fatty tissue. So it must be layers, because I'm not sure about this piece of meat.
It's layered. It's you know, like you're doing a roast pork.
Yes.
And you've got the thick rind of the sort of on the outside, which is the bit that goes crispy. Mm. And then under that, you've got the subcutaneous fat before you get to the meat.
Right. Well, there you are. So take care not to go too deep and into that fatty tissue. Mix the marinade ingredients together and slather, using your hands, no doubt, all over the pork. That's what I'd do if I was doing it, because then you know that you're getting really good coverage. Once again, avoiding its fat and skin. So I'm not sure how you could do that. But anyway, that's what I'd be doing if it was me. If you slung a slather something, get your hands in.
Yeah.
Draw like massage. Yeah. Now, make a boat. This was interesting. Make a boat out of tin foil by placing the pork belly onto a larger piece of foil and folding up the sides, crimping to keep it shape. So, you know, sort of make sure that if there's any moisture, it's not going to drip over the side. So, you know, make a little boat. All its skin should be exposed. Now, with a metal skewer, poke as many holes as you can manage all over the skin. Place the meat in the fridge exposed, and of course that means, you know, not covered, of course, for 24 to 48 hours. The longer you dry the skin out in the fridge, the crispier the result of the crackling will be.
Now, funny, I've come across a couple of articles just lately about that, you know, the best way to cook steak, the only way, the genuine way to serve, the best way to cook steak and all this sort of thing. And they talk about leaving it in the fridge overnight, uncovered, to dry out.
Oh.
So this caught my eye that you're doing the same thing.
Interesting.
Here.
Mm. Oh, right. When it's ready to cook, preheat the oven to 150 degrees Celsius. While you remove pork belly from the fridge and bring it back to room temperature. So you're just doing that while you're, you know, getting it all ready for the next step. Combine the egg white and salt with a paper towel. Apply a layer of white vinegar on the skin, then layer with the egg and salt mixture. And it's quite a bit of salt, but I think that's a lot to do with the crackling, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Now, you're baking that for 30 minutes by placing the foil boat onto a wire rack. Now, I don't mean your oven wire rack. I mean a separate wire rack, and putting your boat on it and put it in the oven. Then increase the heat to 180 degrees Celsius and wait for the pork skin to puff up. That's approximately about 10 minutes. Take out of the oven and let the pork rest for at least 15 minutes, then slice into bite-sized pieces. I could imagine that while I was reading that, and I thought, yes, I can see that, slicing it through, you know, sort of, so you've got all these lovely, like cutting a loaf of bread, really, and serve with rice and stir-fried veggies. Now, it said to add an addition to that, if you wanted to, just put a little bit of tangy chili sauce or plum sauce, and that'd be a divine addition.
Yeah, I think it
just,
would.
Just, you know, for a little bit of sauce. Yeah, I think that it looks complicated because, you know, quite a bit of, you know, work going into the recipe. You sort of think, gee, that's a big method. But when you spell it out, it just would all,
come naturally. I keep meaning to get some five spice powder.
I have got some.
Yeah, and we came across it many years ago. Some friends who used to go around for dinner there, and they one night did something. I said, "Oh, that's really nice." Mm. Oh, it's five spice Chinese.
Well, I'll get you some. I'll bring you some five spice.
Well, I was thinking I might pop into the supermarket and get some. Anyway.
Okay.
I think I will.
Yeah.
Handy stuff to have.
Yeah, it is handy. Yeah. So it's quite a good meal.
It is.
And I must have a look at pork belly next time I'm in,
I think I'll have a closer look. Yeah, so I'd never buy it because Claire wouldn't go anywhere near it. And this is real heart attack stuff, this is,
Oh, yeah, well.
Lots of salt, lots of fat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, you might only have to have it, annually or something.
We used to go to a case in what used to be called Max Brew Bar, which now is Shed 22 or something down there near the Circa Theatre. And before we go to the theatre and we pop in there, and we both have a starter, and I used to have the crispy pork belly bites and some chips.
Oh, love. Oh, great.
Claire had some chicken goujons or something.
Something like that.
And Jolly and I think they've stopped doing them, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
Everybody died.
Yeah, so that's Cantonese crispy pork belly.
Right.
And, I think that'd be a good one for the listeners actually to try.
I think so, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And, just butting in there, Peter, we've both had our moments in the kitchen of recent times.
We have indeed.
Yeah, we have. So I've got something to say, which I'll say now, and I think you've got something to say as well. So my recipe of, spicy carrot...
Dip,
that's right, spicy carrot dip. Looked interesting, and I thought, oh, that'll be something different, and I know you can buy it, but... I thought I'd try this. Well, I did. And I brought a bit in for Peter and to try. And I tried it myself. And then I was wishing I never brought Peter in some because it was quite bland, I thought, even though it had a lot of spices in it. And I wasn't being generous with the spices, but I, half a teaspoon here, half a teaspoon. I thought, yes, that's what it says. So I did. And, it wasn't quite what I imagined it to be. And I followed the recipe, shook all the moisture out of it in the pan, like they said, drain, leave on the hot element or, when it's cooling down, just put it on shelf. I did all that. And so in the end, it became carrot and pumpkin soup because I felt that it just wasn't quite right as a dip.
Well, I have to agree with you. Mm. I mean, it was bland with a capital B.
It was.
Really.
It was. I couldn't understand
it. Thin and watery and not particularly spicy for all the stuff you put
exactly.
in it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I kept looking at the recipe and thinking, did I do something wrong here? Have I missed something out? But I didn't think I had.
No, I think we'll have to give that a thumbs down.
Yeah, I think so. Mm. Yeah, but it didn't get wasted and I like that.
Now, I could give a thumbs up to the one where you did a couple of weeks ago when you were doing persimmons.
Oh, yes.
I was
yes.
fascinated by these persimmons. I wanted to do something. So you made a persimmon bread.
Oh. Oh, I
do
had
you remember
a persimmon
making
bread.
A persimmon bread?
Yeah, bread.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. So I bought a couple of persimmons, and we've been talking about whether there's two different sorts, the mushy sort and the crisp sort. Well, I bought two from the supermarket. Mm. The first one was nice and crisp, and I peeled it easily, grated it. Mm. The recipe called for a sort of mush. Mm. So the second one, I started to peel it, and the skin slid off it because it was mushy underneath.
Oh, okay.
It was half mushy and half firm, so I met a huge great mess sloshing it through the grater.
Oh, right. Okay. Can I ask a question there? We were talking about whether it had a stone in it when we were doing our session.
It just gets firm in the middle, and I didn't
so
go any deep.
So there was no stones or pips or anything like that?
No, I didn't go very deep in it. I left a bit like an apple core, but what was in it, I don't know. I never thought to have a look.
Okay.
Anyway, having mucked about, I went and had a shower to clean up.
It sounds great, a bit like tackling a mango.
You know, a bit sloppy. And I made this, the bread, ever so easy to make, and very nice. I bought you a piece there. You can.
Oh, well, I saw the illustration
put a
from
bit
it.
Of butter
it
on it.
Really, yes. really nice.
And a photograph on the website. Mm. Nothing special, but it sort of tasted quite gingery.
Looks nice.
You certainly wouldn't eat it and say, "Oh, that's a nice bit of persimmon bread."
No,
because it doesn't taste
that?
Of persimmon
no,
at all.
No, sort of the taste.
It's the bulk, I think. Mm. You know, so worth doing.
Oh, no. I thought, well, it looked lovely, and I'm looking forward to having mine with a cup of coffee or tea later in the day.
Good for you.
Yeah. So we'll move on, Peter, to our crispy session. So this is just a nice, simple one, crispy potato top chicken. Now, I read this and I thought, that's interesting, but you'll see why when I read it out. One egg lightly beaten, 1 tablespoon of fresh chopped chives, 1 tablespoon of fresh chopped parsley, 1 teaspoon of celery salt, 3 medium potatoes, and that's about 450 grams, and you peel and grate those, 4 chicken breast fillets, plain flour, 1 egg lightly beaten, and that's extra, 2 tablespoons of oil. Now, the method for this is combine the egg, parsley, chives, salt, and potatoes in a bowl. Place chicken fillets between 2 sheets of plastic wrap and flatten them gently with a meat mallet. Well, if you haven't got a meat mallet, I just think, well, what have you got? Just a rolling pin. Yeah, a rolling pin. So, you know, basically, not everybody has a meat mallet in their kitchen drawer. So a rolling pin is fine. Now, you're tossing that chicken in flour, shaking away the excess flour. Dip into the extra egg, heat oil in the pan, and add the chicken and cook until browned. Now, what you're doing next, and I thought, oh, this is interesting, spoon the potato mixture evenly over the top of the chicken in the pan, then carefully turn the chicken and cook until the potato is well browned and crisp. And the chicken is cooked through. So I could see myself juggling that. But what I'm assuming, Peter, with looking at this recipe, that mixture, the potato mixture with those herbs and the egg, must be quite firm.
Yeah, it must be.
Because
isn't it?
If you're placing that on each chicken, I would be patting it, you know, sort of into place, and then quickly getting a slicer and maybe holding the top.
With another slicer
or a spoon or something, and then quickly turn it over in the pan and brown it. I think it would look quite nice coming out of the pan, actually.
It sounds all right.
But it's very easy.
It's very easy if you can flip it over without.
That's what I thought. I looked at that and I thought, have they got that right? You're putting it on top of the chicken. You could cheat. Good kick it.
Well,
you
that's
know,
what I'm thinking the same thing. You could put it in the pan and then put the meat.
Well, you could.
The chicken on top.
Yeah, no, you could. But I thought, you know, maybe cooking them both separately and then just, you know, flicking the potato mixture on top as you serve it. But no, interesting, I thought.
Interesting. And I'd seen it when you sent it through and I thought, yeah, that's a nice evening meal.
Yeah, it is a nice evening meal. So that's another one of our crispies.
Right. Can I just quickly swing back to the persimmon.
Oh, right, you can.
You know, I go on about quantities and grams and cups and things. Mm. Just to be of interest, it calls for a cup full of persimmon mush.
Yeah, like the pulp. Yeah, the pulp. Yeah.
That's the word I need, pulp. I used 2 persimmons and it was a cupful. Just a bit of a guide there.
Oh, that's good. Oh, no, that's good. But you said 2 persimmons cost you?
About $4.50,
oh,
I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, well. If it's a good accompaniment, you know, and it made a nice loaf.
Yeah.
But, you know, from what I see.
It is. It's jolly nice.
That's good. Well, that's well worth knowing, listeners. 2 persimmons, 1 cup of pulp.
That's what I thought.
And it's important to know that.
Yeah.
To know that. Right.
Right. Now, music this week, I found one piece crispy. I'll play this for
you
first, but I'll leave it for you to make up your mind. Listen to this.
My G900 shoes, 850. I'm so crispy. I'm so crispy.
No. Ignore that. It doesn't get any better. It just goes, oh, I thought, that's not your and I type of music, you know. It's got some rather strange words in there, which we couldn't play on the radio.
Oh, okay.
But it's very rappy, and I'm afraid for it, Gail. You might be into rap, but I'm not. So I've scrubbed that one, and the one I'm going to play you is this one. This is by George Harrison.
Oh, and it's called one of the Beatles.
One of the Beatles, indeed. Yes, and this is called "Ballad of Sir Frankie Crisp." Yes, that was George Harrison, and it's a song about, it's a whimsical, affectionate musical tour of Friar Park. Now, you might know, you recall pictures of the sprawling Victorian Gothic estate in Oxfordshire that George bought in early 1970. But I can remember, great place, a huge rambling sort of place it was called. And the lyrics serve as an homage to the eccentric late 19th century lawyer and original owner of the house, Sir Frank Crisp. Now, he was a brilliant lawyer who loved practical jokes, medieval gardens and architectural oddities. Harrison bought the house and fell so deeply in love with Crisp's playful mind that he dedicated the song to his memory.
Oh.
And they're sort of a magical house tour. The song acts as a guided walk through the estate, referencing actual features of the property. The Fountain of Perpetual Mirth, the underground caves and the maze were all real structures that Crisp built on the grounds. And he said many of the lines in the song are direct quotes of sayings and plaques that Crisp had carved into the stonework around the house. For example, the line, "Joan and Molly sweep the stair," which we might have heard or might not, refers to two specific figures Crisp had carved into the mansion's facade. And the spiritual and life metaphor about it, the recurring directive to let it roll, mirrors Harrison's deep spiritual beliefs, specifically karma and the Hindu concept of going with the natural flow of the universe. And the fountain of perpetual mirth and caves references the estate's sprawling underground tunnels, grottos, and whimsical fountains.
Wow.
And find me where ye echo lays, lose ye bodies in the maze, is a direct reference to the echo chamber and the elaborate garden garden hedge mazes that Crisp designed on the property.
That is amazing. I thought he was a real person because I've actually heard of him.
Crisp, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know whether I actually has read about that property with all its quirks and bits and pieces. I don't know. But I did when you said Frank, was it? What did you say, Frank?
Yeah.
Frank Crisp.
Frankie Crisp.
Yeah, Frankie Crisp. I've actually heard him. It might have been just in something I read, but I knew that he was a real person. Well, you know, it wasn't a figment of anybody's imagination.
No.
Yeah, it must have been an interesting place to live in.
Well, yes, that's indeed. You see, you thought you were just going to be, you were just tuning into a cookery program. And
yeah. Well, it's interesting to get a bit of background.
Well, I thought so.
When
yeah,
people are listening.
Yeah,
too
we might,
right.
Might have time for all the recipes now.
No.
You better move on.
I better move on. Well, here we are. Crispy again. Crispy crust pizza with the lot. It starts off with a half a cup of canned tomato puree, a third of a cup of tomato paste, 2 teaspoons of dried basil leaves, 3 cups of grated cheese, 2 onions chopped, 2 green peppers chopped, and 2 sticks of cabanossi, which I term as salami of any description.
Yep, okay.
A third of a cup of sliced black olives, 250 grams of baby mushrooms sliced, I think they just mean the small ones, half a cup of grated Parmesan cheese. Now, the crust, you can cheat and go out and buy buy a crust. There are some really good commercial crusts out there. But if you don't, this is a crust, 7 grams of sachet of dried yeast, 1 teaspoon of sugar, 3/4 cup of hot water, 2 cups of plain flour and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. Combine the yeast and the sugar, stir in the water, add to the sifted flour and salt in a bowl. Mix to a firm dough. Turn onto a lightly floured surface and knead for about 10 minutes until quite smooth and elastic. Have you ever made your own base, Peter, and you know that it does get elasticy.
Yeah. Claire makes it every time. She makes it in the bread maker.
Oh,
the dough.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I've done that too with the dough. Great. But if you don't, don't feel guilty about buying one from the supermarket.
I was going to say that when I saw the recipe. Well, yeah, you could always do that.
You can get some good bases.
Good idea.
Yeah. Anyway, the method is divide the dough in half and roll out large enough to fit 2 greased pizza pans or pizza, dishes that you've got. Spread each with combined puree and paste and basil. And then just basically top with the cheese, onions, peppers, calamosi, olives and mushrooms. And sprinkle with that bit of Parmesan cheese at the end and bake in a moderate oven, about 180 degrees, we think, for 20 minutes or until golden brown. And, one little piece of information that might be handy is my son said to me, if you're doing something like a pizza, put your pizza plates or your pizza pans in the oven and let them heat up and then just spread a little bit of spray oil on the bottom and that helps brown your base.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it helps brown the base because I've made pizzas a lot and with homemade, bases. And sometimes they just don't get there when the rest of the ingredients are bubbling away. The base still needs that little bit extra.
Yeah, I don't make them at all. But we've got a pizza stone that goes in the oven. I think that's what she preheats.
Oh, that's the way. Preheats the stone. Yeah. I've got a stone too, but it doesn't fit in my oven. It's huge. Yeah, and but a pizza stone would be fabulous.
Right, if we're going to get the last one in, we're going to have to gallop a bit.
Righto. So, should we do the crispy lamb fillets?
I think
with
we should because
sauce?
They sound really nice.
Yeah, it does. So we've got this: 2 cups of stale breadcrumbs, 3/4 cup of package of ground almonds, 2 tablespoons of fresh chopped chives, also the same for chopped parsley, 4 lamb fillets. some plain flour, one egg lightly beaten, a quarter of a cup of milk, and oil for shallow frying. Now, I'm going to give you the mango sauce recipe because this could be good for lots of things. A 425-gram can of mangoes in syrup, one chicken stock cube crumbled, 2 tablespoons of cream, 2 tablespoons of water. Drain the mangoes, reserve 2 tablespoons of the syrup, blend or process mangoes until smooth, and combine the mango puree with the reserve syrup, stock cube, cream and water in a pan, and then just stir that over a heat until heated through.
That sounds nice.
Mm. And the lamb fillets, combine the breadcrumbs, ground almonds and herbs in a shallow dish, toss the lamb in flour, shake away excess. Dip into the combined egg and milk, toss in that crumb mixture and press it. You know, we've done this before. Press it on firmly. And if you can, freeze it for 10 minutes and then shallow fry the lamb in hot oil until lightly brown and tender. And serve that lamb sliced with mango sauce, salad and or vegetables, Peter.
That's a goodie, that one.
It is a goodie. It is a goodie and I like that sauce.
And I don't think lamb fillets are too expensive,
no,
are they? Although you'd
think
they would be, but often if we have a barbecue, I'll have a bit of steak and Claire has the lamb fillets.
Oh, right, I don't look at those often either, to be quite honest. I mean, usually I'm good at buying lamb chops or something, but not usually lamb fillets. But
when I give out the recipes,
I really do go and have a look and see what's out there.
And even if we didn't make the mango sauce... because we sound like we are awfully faddy, but Claire doesn't like mangoes particularly.
Oh, okay.
She's pretty good. She eats everything.
Well, you could use the tin of apricots instead.
Well, I was going to say, even if you didn't make the sauce and put something else on the top.
Oh, you could.
You know, this idea of the ground almonds, chives, parsley and stuff.
Well, it's a nice coating.
Exactly.
Mm, yeah. Nice coating.
Right. I think we galloped pretty well there.
We've galloped pretty well, have we?
And we're just going past the post. No.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Good. Lovely. Well, see you next week.
Well, see you next week.
Yeah. Bye, Gail.
Bye.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.